Hey, welcome to Exec Insider Secrets, made for busy leaders and entrepreneurs. In this podcast, we get to the source and the source of success. Hear from execs who bear all and share their insider secrets, along with my episodes aimed at optimizing your performance, productivity, success, and well-being. My name's Estelle Reed, and I'm an executive coach, trainer, and author at B. Okay, let's begin.
I have got a gentleman with me here that I have been dying to interview for ages. I have been pestering you, haven't I?
Yeah.
I am so pleased to have Paul Snape with us. He is the Deputy Chief Executive and Head of Business Development at The Bridge, which I'll come on to in a moment. But the reason I really wanted him on the podcast is that he's got boundless energy, as you will see. He's a definite, because you and I have been working with each other, haven't we, over the last...
18 months.
Yeah, 18 months.
Yeah, we
met just before the pandemic, didn't we? And then we had to switch to Zoom sessions. But the minute it opened up, you were back in the office, weren't you?
Yeah, for sure.
But I have just admired you so much during that time, because not only were you thrown into a role and very quickly you got on with things, you... with that boundless energy, taking lots of actions, you were definitely thrown in at the deep end, but you swam beautifully, I thought.
And,
you dealt with the pandemic, as a lot of leaders have had to do. But in addition to that, you had personal challenges in the background and you got super fit as well during this time, didn't you? So much going on, and we can dig into whatever aspects you choose as we go throughout the interview. But very briefly, in terms of The Bridge East Midlands, it's a registered charity established in 1993, and they offer a range of specialist services in Leicestershire and Rutland, all sharing the aim of preventing homelessness. And this was another reason why I wanted you on the show, because I just wanted an alternative perspective on organisations, how they operate. And so, again, to have you here is a real pleasure. Their mission is to develop sustainable housing solutions for individuals and communities through partnership, empowerment, and good practice. They seek to help those who are homeless, threatened with homelessness, vulnerable, vulnerably housed, or having difficulties managing their accommodation. Their clients are often experience a variety of issues such as domestic violence, alcohol and substance abuse, social exclusion and isolation, antisocial behaviour, mental health problems, learning difficulties, physical or sensory disabilities, alongside problems with their housing. So what a magnificent organisation, first of all.
We're all right. I'm proud to work for us. And I think I just want to add, I suppose, on top of everything else that you've just said, I wanted to add in our vision. And I think we'll probably touch on it later when we have our conversation, but our vision of resilient, compassionate communities, where individuals can thrive in safe and secure homes, I think that's quite key. Our mission does tell us what you do, but I think the vision really sells what we aspire to achieve for our clients and some of our helping our clients to achieve their aspirations. So I wanted to get that one in there.
No, definitely. And so when, so that's what you aspire, where you're heading towards. Yep. What you will be different once you have moved towards this vision?
I think for the organisation, it's just being able to reach more people. We want to eradicate homelessness. Of course we do. And the day that happens, I think we'll all be shouting from the rooftops. I think it's possible to eradicate rough sleeping.
Yes.
Eradicating homelessness will be a much bigger task, but I think it's important that organisations like ours remain, because we're there to prevent the homelessness. So we need those early intervention services. I think we just need to invest more in those early intervention services to prevent that homelessness from happening in the first place.
Yeah.
Some homelessness will continue to happen, but there will be organisations like ours there to support people through that process, because inevitably, if you look at affordability, people are going to get evicted because they can't afford to sustain the tenancies. We've got a lack of social housing available, a lack of housing generally available. So there will be those times where people are going to struggle, but it's about the safety net being there.
Yeah.
So for us, we want to eradicate what's sleeping. People shouldn't be on the streets. And it's about having that safety net there and those early intervention prevention services.
Yeah.
That's where we're going. And I think it's about the community. And I think with the pandemic, the community has shown their passion and their compassion. I think we've started to care a little bit more about each other.
Yeah.
And that's what we want. And I think for us, it is about educating the public, educating the community, educating the schools that we work with, so people can better understand some of the challenges that people are going through, because then they can better help them. I think if you don't understand someone's situation, you can't necessarily, or don't necessarily know how to help someone.
It is
about the work we do and those frontline services and on the ground stuff, but it is about the wider stuff, talking about what we do, so people really do understand what it is we set out to achieve every day when we come to work.
That leads me into my first question for you, my first official question, which is a day in the life of. So, you know, thinking about your average day to give people some insights, are you part of that education process? Does that fit within your average day or your role, or is that part of your team's role to do that?
I think it's a part of everyone's role, to be honest, the education side of things. It will sit more with my team, I suppose. So I'm in my normal role, I'm a deputy chief executive, my head of business and development role. I'm responsible for the fundraising, the income generation, the communications, the business, the infrastructure, all the central core aspects of the business, and the communication part of that, the educating the public and the community. That is part of my remit. We have a comms officer who does all the pretty stuff on social media and does the website for us. But in terms of the directing of what it is we want to get out to the public, then that's part of my role as part of the SMT.
Yeah. So what's your average day like?
Right now, juggling, a lot of juggling. I think for some context, our chief exec doesn't start until the 1st of November. So I'm still currently acting chief exec, deputy chief exec and head of business development. So my average day at the minute it's emails, it's funding applications. We're doing a lot of recruitment at the minute. We're trying to build a staff team, a really strong staff team. I need some new fundraisers.
You know, when we met last time, I loved, and in fact, I spoke about it on the podcast I was a guest for the other day. Didn't mention by name, but people will know now. It's you. I was so impressed with what you did on your team day and how you've dealt with hybrid working you considered everybody's needs, didn't you, with the way that you organised it. Will you just explain what you did for your team away day?
Yeah, so to start with, we did half of the day online, and the morning was a mixture of updating staff, doing announcements with staff. We introduced them to the new CEO that morning. But to start with, the same as what we do every Wednesday, we have a wellbeing class. So we've commissioned an organisation called FitPack who do a 15-minute health and wellbeing class every Wednesday. That all staff get involved with. So it could be sort of desk-based yoga, or it could be mindfulness or sort of breath work, that sort of thing. So we had a 15-minute class at the beginning, did some announcements. Then we paid some online picture me, which went down really well. Staff love it. And we get really competitive as well. All the managers have to lead a team, and all of the managers get really competitive. Then we did another class, or when I say class, we did a wellbeing session with FitPack where we looked at coping mechanisms for our staff. So a lot of our staff, the frontline staff, work with vulnerable people. They're doing the frontline work for us, and some of the challenges that they experience during the day and some of the pressures that they're under. And it's the emotional pressure as well.
Yeah.
It's about helping them with coping mechanisms throughout the day. So if they've had a particularly rough ride in a visit, and they've got 15 minutes before the next visit, they need to figure out how to calm down or move on. So FitPack did some work with us around looking at coping mechanisms. So that's quite useful. So really practical stuff.
What sorts of things? Because that's interesting.
I suppose it's looking at, it's just even like just breathing exercises or quick 5-minute meditation.
Yeah.
Or just little bits like that. It's just those, it's a toolkit. I think the FitPack have provided us with a toolkit that we've sent down to staff, so they've got that on hand for them. So that's been really positive. What else did we do that morning? We always do good news stories.
Yeah.
So at our away day, all the teams we've got a wide range of services, but all the teams come up with a good news story. So it could be something they're particularly proud of throughout the year, or it could be a client case study, for example. Majority of our team go for the client case studies because they're always the hard-hitting stuff and the stuff that we get the really good outcomes with and why we exist. So we have a session on good news stories. We then did a cook-along. So FitPack again then did. So everyone walked downstairs, took their laptops into the kitchen and did a cook-along. We just made a chocolate mousse, but it was a vegan chocolate mousse. So
we just made
a vegan chocolate mousse. And then we had a competition, and actually I've not announced the winner of that competition yet because I owe them all, well, I owe the winner a bottle of wine, so thanks for reminding me, I best do that. And then in the afternoon we went to Braggart Park. So all of our staff were really keen to have a social aspect because they've not all met up in one go since March 2020. So we all went to Braggart Park, and luckily the afternoon was beautiful. It was sunny, it was warm. We all went for a long walk in Braggart Park, sat outside by the cafe, and all just caught up for a couple of hours. It was just nice just to sit down and just talk about stuff that wasn't work related, and have that social interaction again, and then went to the pub for a pint.
Nice. Sam's, I don't know. I was just really impressed when you told me. I thought, how brilliant and innovative, and I loved all your ideas. So I'm going to move on. You've just said that you share good news stories.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. Again, I think that's, and it really links back into purpose, doesn't it? Why we exist.
Yeah.
And it has that positive reinforcement, but it also, I've been listening to a book recently called Belonging, and what you're doing there is you are reinforcing that sense of belonging. This is why we exist, and that's what makes really strong teams. So you're encouraging your team to share good news stories. What achievement, career results, or outcome are you most proud of that you have been responsible for? I know you'll say, oh well, the rest of my team helped me or whatever else, but what are you most proud of?
I think, to be honest, the last 18 months.
Yeah.
I think, as you said at the beginning, not only did we have the pandemic, there's been some personal challenges there for me as well. And leading the organisation through that, and then our CEO, unfortunately, stepping down. And as you said, being chucked into a job role in the middle of a pandemic. I'd say that was my proudest moment, that we've kept the organisation going.
And how have you kept going? Because that was so much, you know, when I'd listen to you sometimes and think, blimey, O'Reilly. So how have you kept going? What's enabled you to deliver the results that you've delivered and to stay afloat?
For me, it's my determination anyway.
Yeah.
But I have got a good team around me, and the team have helped massively. I think without that good team, then it isn't as easy. Obviously, I've got my family and my friends, and it's just about knowing who you can call upon. I also like time on my own. I appreciate that time on my own where I can just think about what I've got to do, or just say, right, I'm not talking to anyone today. Just Like, and sometimes that's all that's needed, just switch off on the world and you deal with it. I think it's been up, the last year has been up and down. Yeah. I think we've had some really good positive outcomes, and as much as you can make the most of the pandemic, we've had to carry on. Our clients still need us. We've not closed the organisation at all, albeit we've changed the way we've worked, but we've continued throughout. We've taken on 27 staff, I think, since August last year. So we've onboarded all of those staff into the organisation. We've grown the organisation. The demand is there. The demand's up 40% on the previous year. So we're to be able to lead that, and for the staff to still be thriving and the staff to still be wanting to come to work every day after a tough 18 months, then I'm more than proud of that, I think.
Exactly. But it's doing the things that you've just described, you know, that team day and your regular touch points of saying, well, you know, what's the good news story and why are we doing what we were doing? That's what holds a good team together. And but also it's to do, and it segues nicely into my next question, which is about values. And you know, we join organizations where we've got similar values, so we can connect with what the organization's about and also the purpose. So what's important to you? You know, what are your values when it comes to an organization? What are the three most important things in your role, would you say?
I think for me, it's honesty, loyalty, and respect, I think. I mean, and part of that, I think respect means different things to different people. And for me, I think it's just about respecting each other, understanding each other in terms of what they're going through. But for me, I think be straightforward and direct as well. And that's where some of that honesty comes from. And I think as long as you're setting the boundaries or the parameters for that honesty, they're it. Because actually, if you're not honest, firstly, you've got to be honest with yourself. And I think for me, being more honest with myself about what I can achieve, knowing my limits or knowing when I need to slow down, being honest with who I am, that's really important. And that's where that respect element then comes from. And then obviously the loyalty. So it all ties in. Yeah. Respect is one of our organisational values as well.
Yeah, coincidentally.
I mean, I could have just reeled off all of our organisational values, but I think for me, it's the honest. Our organisational values are bang on in terms of partnership, quality, all the things that we need as an organisation are there, the empowerment side of things, and always remaining positive, which we have done for the last year. So all of those for me are important, but for me, it's about that honesty and that loyalty, whether that's loyal to the organisation, loyal to your friends, your family, that's always been important to me. And being
the empowerment piece, I've seen you do that over the last 18 months as well. And, you know, I've seen you become letting go of things.
Yeah.
Can you remember all of that work that we did?
I can, yeah. but then that's me coming back to being honest with myself about things as well. I can let them go and I should let them go, because for me it's beneficial to let them go. But then also, as I've said previously, I've got a really strong team behind me as well, who have been there. So
but again, it's been impressive listening to you make those changes, which is one of the, you know, that's one of the traits, you know, and particularly as leaders grow and develop. And I was having a conversation just earlier today with an aspiring leader, and we were talking about perfectionism but also growing up in an environment where, you know, if you want a job doing properly, do it yourself. So if you have that type of attitude, then from a leadership perspective, you end up sinking, don't you? If you do everything yourself.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can let go of the perfectionism, and if you can empower your team, you know, it helps you stay afloat, but also it builds that trust and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so going back to, so honesty, loyalty, respect. So what for you were the childhood experiences that led to those things being important?
I think for me, in terms of the honesty, and I think this is where, and we've chatted about this, I think the honesty bit starts with being honest with myself. And I think as a young gay guy coming out at the time that I did, probably later in life than what some young kids do. And I'm in awe of them. If you can come out when you're 14, 15, then good on you. Yeah. But I think for me, the honesty, being honest with who I was at a young age, I think that's where that's probably manifested itself from.
Yes.
And you grow to understand who you are and love who you are, and people, like I say, just being genuine and genuine and you. That's and don't try to force stuff, or everyone has their quirks and stuff, but I think I just wish I'd have been more honest with myself at an earlier age.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of hindsight, isn't it, and development. But also, you know, becoming authentic, you know, I think it's a journey for most of my clients. And one of the things I routinely hear is people saying, I feel like I can just be myself now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the real you shine forward, as opposed to, and again, a bit like the guy I was working with this morning, just saying that we're born perfectly. That's my belief. Just the way we're made.
Yeah.
We just get bent out of shape sometimes by those childhood experiences that make us cover up who we are. Mm. And then, obviously, you know, I use Havening to go, da-da, this is who I am. I'm interested in the honesty, the loyalty, and then the respect. Where does that link to those childhood experiences? How does that, or why did that become important, do you think?
I think the loyalty and respect thing, the respect element has come as I've been growing up and I've built my friendship circles and I've built my career and I've built and got to know people. I think when I went away last week, we were talking, like, a big group of us, we've known each other for over 20 years now. We all met in a nightclub down the road in Colville. We all met in a nightclub 20 years ago in 2001, whenever it was, and we're all still friends now. And do you know what I mean? I have a really good group of friends. We don't see each other all the time. In fact, we can go 6 months without seeing each other. But I think that's where that loyalty side comes from. And I think once you've built those relationships, and whether it's career relationships or the relationship within the organisations and things like that, that's where that loyalty comes from. And I do really respect that. And then it's about respecting each other and knowing who we are. And we all have different paths, or all of our lives are going down different paths. It is about respecting who you are. We're all individual, and you can all come back 6-9 months later and still be best of mates. But we've respected each other, because some have gone off and got married and had kids, some haven't, some still go to Thailand on holiday every year. Do you know what I mean? So we're all completely different. We've all got a wide age range. So it's nice, and that's where all that's built from. And friendship circles are really important.
My next question is about stress. What causes you stress, but then how do you de-stress? And it was interesting even earlier when I was saying, how have you dealt with everything? And you can tell how important that friendship network is and has been throughout this pandemic. So what, like for me, I used to just listen to anything, oh my God, how is this man dealing with so much stuff? So what causes you stress?
What causes me stress? Apart from not feeling in control, but I think that causes probably everyone that causes people stress. I think sometimes, and I know that I've definitely got better at this, the feeling of, I suppose, that self-confidence and self-doubt and not feeling that you're doing a good enough job.
Yeah.
They're the main thing, and people who just don't communicate or people who don't follow through on that, what they say they're going to do, that stresses me out, because that's when I'm not in control. Yeah. So they're the main ones, but I think with the self-confidence and the self-doubt, I've got better at dealing with that over the last year. So working with yourself and going through.
Well, and also just looking at your results.
Yep.
You know, the outcomes that you've achieved, you know, because that's really what matters, isn't it, at the end of the day?
And I think, and as people, as human beings, we are really resilient.
Yeah.
Or we can be really resilient. We're tough. Our bodies are tough. Yeah. And I think looking at what we've all been through, the pandemic, it's all affected us completely differently. We're not one size fits all, but the pandemic's affected us all differently. But then just before Christmas, my dad passed away. And then 7 weeks later, my grandma passed away. And dealing with the organisation as well and making sure our staff are all right, moving all of our staff home to work from home and getting them set up. Staff feeling the pressure as well, that being isolated. Yeah. And whilst we have Teams and we have Zoom, which have been great and lifesavers for us all, it doesn't replace that social interaction and that face-to-face stuff that all of us crave as human beings. That's what we want, is the friendship circles, and we want those hugs. And so that's been difficult. I think we have had a rough old ride for the last 18 months, but we're coming out the other end, and things are going to get tough again for people, generally speaking. But I think we're in a good position to move forward. Well, as an organisation, we are.
So how do you de-stress then?
Me?
And are you going to tell us about your transformation or not?
Well, if you want to tell me about, well, I can do. What, my hair transplant in Turkey last year?
Oh,
it's the first one, yeah.
I was, whatever you want to share.
I think, twofold, I suppose. I decided it was just before lockdown, it was February, I decided I was having a hair transplant, booked my flights for September and managed to actually go. That didn't actually alter, and I managed to fly out to Turkey last September, so it's been just over a year now since I had my hair transplant. And then in the new year, what caused it was I was getting, I was trying my suits on, it didn't fit. So when I was getting ready for my dad's funeral, I was trying my suits on, and none of them fitted because of the old lockdown weight. So I just burst into tears and decided that I was going to get fit.
Oh, good for you. And how much have you lost?
I lost 2 stone to start with, but then I joined the gym in June, July this year.
Yeah.
And have had a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Who's been a godsend, and has really helped me to get back on the wagon, I suppose. And that in terms of de-stressing, that is been a massive help. I used to go to the gym years ago, but it is amazing how much it does help you.
How does it help you?
Me, I feel like I don't get stressed as much because I'm taking my frustrations out on the gym anyway.
Yeah.
So I think subconsciously I'm doing the de-stressing before I get stressed. Well, that's what I think anyway. What it feels like. I think I've got a good PT. He's great.
Anything else you do to de-stress? You've obviously got your mates.
I've got my mates who are always there if I need them. Drop of a hat, go for a pint, or just drop them a text, or just moan to them down the phone, or have a good cry, or, you know what I mean? And I've got a whole group. So, they're all there at different times and for different things, and it's nice.
And I'm so pleased you're talking about crying. And I was, again, when I was recording this podcast the other day, and I think I've shared with you, my dad is in his final days now. I've been up north. I'm not up north now, I'm back home. But we spent 2 weeks up north, and it's been very up and down, and we were trying to predict, you know, how long we've got left together. And my sister and I did lots of walking up and down the prom. So that was our, you know, march. And I said, I feel like my tear buckets are filling up. And I've not had to do any journaling, any havening or any EFT. All we've done is when we've needed to cry, we've cried. Yeah. And a bit like, again, gentleman I was dealing with today, I said, tears are part of my commodity in that. Often when I'm doing work with people, they will shed tears that should have been shed when they were younger.
Yeah.
So, you know, trap old stuff that's trapped. Yeah. And the fact, and again, I have the saying, better out than in. So what kept my head afloat was being able to effectively process those emotions while we're walking. Sometimes my sister would cry, sometimes I'd cry, but it kept us level-headed. And I think there's too much of a stigma around, particularly with men, not being allowed to cry or express emotions, but we all emote,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, thank you for bringing that on the agenda. That's good.
And I think as well, yeah, I think I've never shied away from it, and neither of my friends. I think we've always been really open, and I'll pretty cry on anyone. If it needs to come out, it comes out, doesn't it? I don't care as long as you give me a hug.
Yeah, yeah. And what does it do for you once you've had a cry?
Me, I suppose it's that pressure, isn't it? It just gets some of that emotional pressure out.
Yeah.
And you do feel better. I think anyone who says they don't feel better needs to cry more.
Yeah. <I'd say. laughs> You've been strong too long.
Yeah, you've been strong too long. And
yeah.
I think, yeah, it's sort of conversation I've had with my mum as well. Like, it's all right to cry. Like, you just need to. Sometimes you do just need to break down and just have a good old cry, because you do feel, genuinely do feel better after. Well, I do.
Yeah. No, I do as well. Right. So moving on to optimizing performance and success. So how do you optimize your performance? Because you are like an unstoppable machine. How do you manage to do so much? You know, what
do you have? I don't know. I haven't got a clue.
What do you have, a routine? Do you have a PA? Do you focus on your strengths? What would you say?
I think it's making sure you have that work-life balance, because we could all get bogged down, and I could quite easily sit there and just churn work out. I could be up at 6 o'clock in the morning and not finish till 9 o'clock at night. But I think it's about having that planned time away from work. What I always do, and there's me looking at my diary now, I've got all my gym sessions planned in for the next 12 weeks.
Yes.
5 sessions a week, 4 of them are in the week during the daytime.
Yeah.
So it either makes me have a lunch break,
yeah,
or it makes me finish at a reasonable time.
Brilliant.
So they're all planned in. I think it's making sure I spend time with my friends, using those for support. And doing the things at the minute, it's just about prioritizing, getting the important stuff done.
Yeah.
And I was having this conversation with a couple of our managers yesterday. Sometimes it is about just being good enough.
Yes.
And not being up here, your heart. Because as an organization, all of the management team, and sometimes we are our own worst enemies, because our standards are so high.
Yes.
Which is great, and everyone should aim and aspire to have those really high standards. But actually, sometimes you can't, because you punish yourself too much. And it is about just sometimes being just good enough.
Yeah.
And being just a good enough manager and being there. You can't be it. You can't reply to all your staff all the time.
Yeah.
And some of our conversations that we've been having, it's about, yes, you can be there.
Yeah.
You're at the end of the email, end of the phone. But you can't do everything all the time.
And you can't be a perfectionist, can you, about it?
No, there's times and places for it, and there's times where you need your standards to be completely up here, but it's about knowing when to have that. And we've made a real effort over the last year, because we have, what we'll say, we've been short staffed, we've been under pressure, we've not had a chief exec. And I think we've made the effort as a management team, particularly the SMT and myself, we've made an effort of really saying, right, just do your best. And that's all you can do, as long as you're doing your best all the time. And sometimes your best is just good enough. And it's about knowing that that is actually all right.
Yeah.
And that's previously, I suppose I've always, that's the bit where we said earlier about my self-confidence and self-doubt. It's been, I've wanted to do my absolute top quality stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And put pressure on myself. And actually, it does you no good whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to bring things to a close, and I just want to know about either what's your nugget of genius or your biggest insider secret. So what information as a leader, as an executive, would you pass on? So what's kind of your, and did it come from a book, a course, a mentor, an experience?
I think for me, I think if you look at me, I suppose, leading the organisation over the last year to 18 months, right now, it's about give your staff the trust right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And let them go off and find their own way.
Yes.
And I think I think throughout my career, I've always had the trust placed in me, but I think it's really important to give your staff that trust to start with.
Yeah.
And actually, because one, then you're not micromanaging them because you're putting too much pressure on yourself. So yeah, putting the trust in and supporting them to achieve what they want to achieve. But I think giving them that trust and telling them explain to them, you've got that trust, we're giving you this trust, if you need us support, our doors are open, call on us, these are your toolkits, this is what we've got at your disposal, get on with it, come to us if you're having a problem. And for me that works, because the staff go, well, actually, oh, I'm being trusted, I can actually go on. We've got flexible working in now, so we've given staff a broader range of time where they can manage their own diaries, fit it around their children. So if they want to go and pick the kids up from school and take half an hour out at 3:15 in the afternoon, then they can.
Brilliant.
And productivity has probably gone up, I would say. So yeah, for me, it is give your staff that, trust your staff right from the beginning. Don't make them earn that trust, because that's not fair.
Yeah. No, that's excellent. And interestingly, I was reading something, I can't remember where or what, but it was saying it was the single most important factor from a leadership perspective. So you've just confirmed that. So nice.
And I think, just to wrap up, I think with that trust thing, and we've changed the way we recruit as well now. So we're recruiting based on more on the value side of things rather than the experience. So actually we're recruiting the right people. We can teach the knowledge stuff, we can teach. But I think to work for an organisation that works with the client group that we work with, you need to bring those values. You need to be recruited based on who you are and those personal attributes you bring. And then actually throughout that interview process, you find out who you can bring on board and trust and give that trust to in the first place. Yeah. So I think it's the rounded thing. And I think that's why it's worked so well over the last year. So I wanted to wrap up with that.
No. And that's such a modern way of leading. So I love it. It's brilliant. So how can people connect with you? What's your preferred platform? You're on Instagram. Know that, because I follow you on both.
LinkedIn, Instagram and Twitter. I do really need to reactivate to my business Twitter.
Yeah.
If I can remember what I can't remember what the profile is, but LinkedIn probably.
Yeah, LinkedIn. Okay. So I will include your handle beneath this podcast. Well, thank you so much. Again, sat here in complete admiration of you, listening to all the innovative things that you're doing in an organization that you'd expect in the big corporate world. And, you know, here you are just naturally doing these things.
Thank you very much.
So really impressive. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
If any of these topics have piqued your interest and you'd like to optimise your performance, productivity, success or well-being, here's the next steps. You could book a free coaching discovery meeting with me, but please bear in mind I have a limited number of sessions available each month. Perhaps you want to get to know me a bit more. See the link below to book and or connect with me on social media. I am Estelle Reed, executive coach, trainer and author at Bee, and this has been Exec Insider Secrets. Thanks for listening.